This is James Devine with the Music Ed Podcast, and I have for a second week in a row Lori Schwartz-Reichel back on the podcast, and today we're going to talk about Prepare to be Judged.
Strike up the band so you can give your kids a helping hand. From interviews to teaching tips, you'll add this to your bag of tricks. There's no smarter way to spend your time, so keep it right here with James Devine. The Music Ed Podcast, where you get quick and easy tips on how to be a better band teacher.
Welcome to the podcast, Lori.
Thank you for having me.
What should our purpose be in going to competitions?
In Maryland, where I currently teach, we have county and state adjudications. Often the public mistakes these to be competitions. They're not. They are an opportunity to have the overall performance of an ensemble judge, and feedback is given for 7 different categories. And these categories include tone, intonation, technique, balance, interpretation, musical effect, and other factors such as choice of music, instrumentation, discipline, and so forth. And so the purpose of going to the competition is then to decide, is it really a competition or is it an adjudication where we're hoping for feedback to be given?
I love that. We seem to sometimes get so much focused on competitions and what our score is or what our ranking is with other bands. I spent 13 years at a high school and we did a lot of marching band competitions, and sometimes they were discouraging instead of encouraging because we'd kind of be compared to groups that were way ahead of us, decades sometimes ahead of us of where we would be. And I was always talking about, we'll talk about this a little bit later, but always trying to get the students to realize we're going to get feedback,
right?
And we're going to get better. And we did get better. Every year we got better and our scores went up. What can directors do to prepare themselves to be judged?
Sure. So I think the first thing we have to do is examine what the intention of the adjudication is. Is it a competition or is it a performance to be rated, or is it both? And regardless, all adjudications are opportunities to gain feedback about the performance that our students and we as the conductors are giving for improvement. So the first thing we need to do is select music appropriate for the level of our students' abilities. And that means having music that contains or can be arranged for our ensemble's instrumentation. So knowing where the strengths of the ensemble are or where the limitations are, and either avoiding those limitations or enhancing those strengths of our sections and our ensemble. And then choosing music that can be mastered in an adequate timeline. And I like to use the word mastered rather than perfected, because no performance is ever perfect. But can we master it? Can we get it to that level of where we can feel very content with our performance? We're pleased with it. It's pleasing to the audience. We've produced something that we're proud of, and we feel that we've mastered some type of beauty. And then from that point, once we've chosen the music that we are using, we have to study our score. We have to know it inside and out. It doesn't mean that we have to have it memorized, and by no means have I ever had my scores memorized. Sections, yes. There are particular passages and sections, yes. But studying the score and then anticipating where difficulties will arise for our students. We know our student musicians better than the adjudicators. And so knowing where in rehearsal it's going to take longer for that mastery to emerge, and then really, you know, having a plan to isolate and attack those areas and then master those sections.
Early on in my teaching career, I forgot to bring my copies of the score.
Oh.
And so I had to do it by memory, but not intentionally. And in some ways, that was one of the best performances in my memory, both of me as a conductor and of my ensemble. At the time, I was teaching at a small private school, and my high school band was about 12 students, and they were all really, really good performers. So we did well that time, but it was interesting to realize in the warm-up room that I didn't have my scores.
That's definitely been one of my biggest fears, going to adjudications. Not because I don't think that I could conduct it. I feel that I probably could conduct the score quite well, I would hope, without it. But just the fear of knowing that it's not there and not having that crutch.
I've seen Colonel Gabriel a couple of times, and he's amazing to watch as a clinician. Of course, I think he's in his 90s. I'm not sure. He's definitely in his 80s or so, and he's still doing all state bands and things. But he'll sit there and have the score off to his side, you know, a complex grade 5 or grade 6 piece he's working on with the all state band, and he'll stop the rehearsal and tell the third clarinets, in measure 47, you missed the B flat, or you missed this. Make sure that you do it. And he's doing all this from memory. He's really amazing to watch.
Wow, that's impressive. He's probably doing it in sleep as well.
Yeah. What should directors do in the, let's say, 6 to 8 weeks leading to the performance, and then maybe 1 week before, and then the day of? Because what we're going to do is going to change. What are some changes we should make?
Sure. So I would say 6 to 8 weeks before, once we've selected the music and we know what pieces we're going to use in it. And with that said, it doesn't mean that we can't change out the music. 4 or 5 weeks before a performance, I've just voided a piece or tossed it out the window because I realize that it's not going to get to where it needs to be in that time frame. And that's okay. Hopefully you can realize that a little sooner than later, but if that occurs, that's fine. But in those 6 to 8 weeks before, learn and understand the history of the piece and how that factors into the interpretation of the music making. And so making sure that your students know who the composer is, when it was composed, and what the background of the piece is. And that really allows them an opportunity to interpret the correct style of the piece and master it to the best of their ability. Being able to learn the music and make appropriate tweaks to sections. For instance, experimenting with balance, expression, and so forth. Early on in my career, I felt like every musician had to be playing all the time. And some directors might not agree with me on this, but I had some really fantastic mentors along the way who demonstrated to me and taught me that not every player has to be playing at every time, every moment. And so realizing that if we have, I'm just exaggerating here, but 30 alto saxes, and I can say that because I'm an alto saxophone player, but 30 alto saxes, and it's supposed to be played, or the composer intends for the music to be played piano, and it still sounds forte, then we need to make some of those players tacit. And then hopefully if we are making some players tacit at those times, then if we're doing it again later in another piece, then we're swapping it out. So then the other section of the other part of the section will play when the other part of the section is tacit and so forth. But realizing that the composer has written dynamics for that reason and that we have to adjust our sections accordingly. And then recording the rehearsals and adjudicating the recordings ourselves, both as the conductor and the students. So recording a passage of music and then taking it home that night as the conductor and the teacher and listening and what has to be done the next day, and then building our lesson plan off that. And or having the students listen to that recording and what do they hear? How do they think they're playing? What would they suggest that they do, and so forth? And then the other big thing that is very popular here in Maryland is inviting clinicians to a rehearsal to mock adjudicate the ensemble. And many of my colleagues will start this 6 to 8 weeks before the performance. Some do it 2 weeks before, some do it 4 weeks before. But I hesitate doing that as often as some of my colleagues I have seen doing it. Maybe do it 2 or 3 times. I've seen people do it 6, 7, or 8. But realize that if you have that clinician come and stand in front of your band, they're going to produce things a little bit differently. They're going to conduct things a little bit differently. And the ensemble is going to react to that person differently. I'm not saying worse or better, but differently. And knowing that when that clinician gets off the podium and you step back on, things are going to change again. And so realizing that that clinician is there to enhance the ensemble, to enhance your teaching, to enhance their playing, but not to correct things and not to think that they are the be all end all, that the ensemble is going to sound better, but to make suggestions, to offer feedback and to enhance your teaching.
I've had some great clinicians and I've had some clinicians that were more of the, I'm the expert, I'm going to tell you how to fix this thing. As I got to know which ones were more of the better type, I was able to bring those in more often. And then sometimes the students and I, after the clinician left, we'd say, you know what, we tried that, but we don't like that for our group. But we tried it. And there were other things the clinician would suggest, and we would do those things.
Exactly. I do a lot of clinicking of bands, and over the last couple of years, I've changed the way I clinic ensembles. Instead of me being on the podium as the clinician and conducting the band, I like to step off and stay off the podium as much as possible and allow the conductor to be up there and the teacher to be up there with their ensemble. From that standpoint, I can really see what the conductor is doing and how the musicians are responding to that conducting. And then I can make suggestions to the conductor and we can immediately try those. And like you said, there might be things that the conductor likes and the students like, and they're going to use those suggestions, or they might not work for that particular conductor or that group of students. And so trying those things with the conductor who is actually going to be conducting the ensemble, I feel is really important.
I also like what you said about having some students tacit. It took me a long time to get to the point of being okay with that. I would kind of tie it into explaining what timbre is to them. And then telling them, you know what, the timbre just doesn't work. You know, the composer has this nice lyrical thing that's supposed to be clarinet focused, and we have 3 clarinets and 30 alto saxes. And so the timbre of the clarinet isn't coming out. And so it was always easier for me to actually tell saxes not to play, being a sax player, because they knew I wasn't just hating on them. On the saxes. Of course, we play the best instrument, you know, that you and I do.
We do, of course. James, there was something else I wanted to add to that. We also must prepare our ensembles for all types of interruptions to learning and challenges of life. For instance, students will get sick. We might get sick as teachers. Inclement weather will happen. I remember the one year where I was preparing my ensemble, we were selected as the featured middle school band for our state association conference. And that particular year, we had 11 snow days in about a 3-week period of time. And so realizing that these challenges, particularly with weather and illness, are going to happen, and that knowing that schedules will be modified for testing, particularly for large scale standardized tests. And, you know, family crisis may occur, and I'm learning this now as a mother, things that I wouldn't have thought about in my late 20s and early 30s is that, you know, I might be healthy and I might have a plan for teaching, but if there is an emergency with one of my children or a crisis with the family, that comes first. And we have to prepare for all of these types of interruptions, and realizing it goes back to selecting that music that we can master in an adequate timeline, but realizing that these interruptions are going to happen and then preparing for them within that timeline.
That is so true. The biggest thing that I've noticed with going to middle school is I feel like sometimes I get to teach music more instead of preparing for competition or performance. So let me share a little bit about some things that have happened to me in the past and something that I've seen happen. And then I'll ask you a question related to that. The first year that I was at the high school that I just came from, I was there for 13 years. The first year that I took them to a adjudication event, they had not been to anything like that as far as anyone could remember. And they were so excited to get on the bus and go. I probably picked music that was too difficult for them. They got on stage and they basically froze. They were kind of like deer in the headlights. I joked around with them afterwards that I could have just like given them 1-2 ready play and walked off the stage and they would have played the same way because there was no change in dynamics, no change in tempo. They just went on automatic pilot from measure one to the end of the song. The nice thing was I had prepared them for that. I said, you know, you guys never have been. This is kind of a festival where they rate things a little bit harder. We may not score well. And we didn't. We scored a 4 that year. And a lot of it was from them just freezing. And a lot of it was from me picking material that was a little bit too hard for them. But it didn't bother any of them. And I recently heard a band director in my state who we have in that same competition. We have a regional competition, and it's more of an adjudication clinic competition. And then the top 1/3 of the bands move on to a state level where the judges are even harder. So if you perform the same way at the regional and score 1 and get to go to state, you might get a 2 at the state level, even with the same performance, just because they're told to judge it a little bit harder. I remember one director of a top band in our state who went to it and he's like, I don't know. They seem to judge too hard. My students got a 2 and they were so discouraged. It really brought them down. And I remember thinking that he probably could have prepared his students a little bit for that, and then they wouldn't have been discouraged. So what can directors do to maybe prepare their students for their rating, no matter what it might be?
So directors must explain the rating scale to the students. And so most states have the rating scale of Roman numerals 1 through 5, with 1 being superior, 2 being excellent, and so forth down the line. So making sure that the students understand what this rating scale is and how they will be judged. And mostly it's based on a rubric. So then explaining the different categories of the rubric and what would result in a superior in the tone category and what would result in an A in intonation and so forth. So making sure that the students understand that. And then again, explaining to them that it is an adjudication, that they're being judged and not so much a competition if it's intended to be just an adjudication, and explaining that to them and that the intention is to receive feedback. And so you're preparing the students to be told what they're doing well, what they're not doing well, what they need to improve upon, suggestions for improvement, and so forth.
These are all some items of advice. Do you have any closing thoughts on this prepare to be judged topic?
Sure. I wanted to go back a little bit and talk about, we had talked about what to do 6 or 8 weeks before, but could we talk a little bit about what conductors could do 1 week before and possibly the day of in preparation?
Okay. Definitely.
1 week before the adjudication, I would, if you haven't been doing so already, is practicing as if it is the performance. And so hopefully your rehearsals 6 to 8 weeks, months before, whatever, the students are being well managed. They're rehearsing well. They're sitting up straight. They have great posture. They're not talking, all of those wonderful things. But specifically the week before, practicing as if it is the performance. And this includes not only how they should act in the performance, but how they should be acting on the bus, how they should walk into the performance venue, how they should walk onto the stage, what that looks like, what that sounds like, what that can feel like, even explaining how they might get a little bit nervous and what they could do to sort of, you know, calm their nerves. How to be acknowledged if you're going to have the band stand and be acknowledged, if you're going to bow, if you're going to have soloist bow and so forth. How to sit properly when they're playing versus when they're resting. Oftentimes, students, particularly at the middle school level, will do things we've never seen them do during the rehearsal, but they'll do it during the performance. I also make it very clear to the ensemble that if we have a soloist or soloists, that we are not turning to look at them at any time, particularly if maybe something doesn't go quite as planned, that we're not quickly turning around and glaring at them because that's going to make the situation worse for the soloist. It's also going to draw attention from the adjudicators in the audience. And it could be something that maybe nobody else picked up or heard. And so just by that student or students turning around quickly, they're drawing attention to something that maybe someone didn't pick up before. So, you know, how to sit, how to stand and so forth, and always reviewing behavioral expectations. On the day of, do you have a rehearsal the day of, or do you not? If you do have a rehearsal the day of, I would, caution you to not play everything the whole way through. I've done this before and I've learned my lesson afterwards that usually that is the better performance because they're excited and that they're playing it, the music that for the first time that day. But maybe just starting the beginning of the piece and then finishing up the last phrase or the last bit of the ending and just making sure they're starting together and then they're releasing together. And then providing some type of distraction for the students. Maybe it's an inspirational story. Maybe it's something that you're talking about unrelated to music. I have this little thing that I call pausing in rehearsal, a rehearsal pause, the power of pause, I actually refer to it as. And we have this little time in rehearsal where I might tell a story or share a distraction, and we call that story time with Lori. It looks and sounds different for every conductor, but that's what it is in my rehearsal. And often on that day, just providing them with a little bit of inspiration or distraction to, you know, alleviate their nerves and let them think about something else. And then lastly, students sense stress, and they can see and they can hear when we, the conductors, are anxious, when we're stressed, when we're concerned about something. And so realizing that the way we present ourselves is probably going to be the way our students are going to reflect that in their playing. So if we feel confident and we feel very calm in our demeanor and what we're about to do, I think our students are going to mirror that as well.
These are all items of great advice and things that I've incorporated myself also. And I wish I would have known them when I was a younger director. So hopefully we're able to help some younger directors here. I started my career as a professional musician in the Army band. And I had this policy for me personally where I would never perform the pieces I was performing on the day of the performance. And that's just what worked best for me. And I remember I had so much pushback from my students because we would do our warm up and tuning and we would do nothing with the piece. And I realized that the compromise was to do what you were talking about, where you do the starts and stops and maybe a few of the transitions. And so that's what I ended up doing. And this must be also why I am really loving middle school. My distraction is I used to make these little signs, and I probably will continue to do it now that I'm back at middle school again, but I would make these signs that I would hold up just for the ensemble members to see when we were sometimes on the stage already, and it would say something like, please don't fart or please don't burp or something like that. And they would give a little chuckle and then we'd go move on to whatever piece we were playing. So it was kind of like an inside joke between me and the ensemble members.
That's awesome. I did have one closing thought that I'd love to share, and it's just a little snippet from my article, Prepare to be Judged. There is no better adjudicator than yourself. And so I'll just read this little ending to our listeners. The definition of an adjudication is a formal judgment. Expect adjudicators to assess your ensemble based on the composer's score. They expect to hear from the ensemble what they see printed in the music. Be receptive to each adjudicator's evaluation and trust their abilities. Then, use the feedback to honestly attempt to improve your conducting, teaching, and the overall sound of the performance. I feel if we can do that, then we are prepared to be judged.
Lori writes for InTune magazine and is a longtime music educator. You can find some more of her items and articles at makingkeychanges.com, and that will be listed in the show notes. Thank you so much for joining us, Lori.
Oh, thank you so much, James. This was awesome.
The Music Air Podcast, where you get quick and easy tips for how to be a better band teacher.